The culture is the culture. It's 4 to 6 A to B, competitive excellence, and the brotherhood. The plan to win has never changed. So the culture here and the plan to win is always going to be here at Ohio State.
Welcome back to 4 to 6 with A&B, your Ohio State podcast on the Athletic. Bill Landis joined as always by Ari Wasserman, coming off of what to me, Ari, felt like the first real weekend of college football. Like we've been playing it for, I don't know, 4 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks now. But this past weekend when the SEC got rolling, it felt like real to me. It felt like a normal Saturday, or I guess as normal as it can feel when like the Pac-12 and the Big Ten still aren't playing.
Did you just say the SEC is the best conference in college football? Is that what I heard?
I mean, it just means more.
It does. Yeah, I felt that too. The one thing I will say is that like when we first were faced with the reality that there might not be fans in stadiums, that was kind of a weird thing to picture, especially, you know, going to a stadium every weekend for the past, you know, 5-10 years, depending on who we're talking about, filled with 100,000 fans for the most part. But I will say that the TV viewing experience has been awesome and feels normal even if the stadiums are empty. And then in some stadiums, there's just a ton of people. So I don't know. I'm still kind of wrapping my mind around that a little bit. There were a few times where, even in the Oklahoma game, there was a screen grab I saw where Spencer Rattler was walking behind the bench without a mask on, and there were a bunch of fans without wearing masks, like leaning over trying to high five them, and it just like kind of surprising a little bit about like how close they're getting to people who are in the stadium. But not to detract from the point, I felt like I was watching football on an Ohio State bye week and like really enjoying it. I thought it was an awesome slate of games, crazy upsets, which we'll get to, and yeah, it felt good to be back. I'm really happy we got here. It was looking really bleak for a while.
It was. And it did. It felt good, I think, to see some of those games, and hopefully it can keep progressing this way. You know, there's going to be disruptions, but I think, you know, as we get closer and closer to the start of the Big Ten season, I become increasingly confident that they will be able to figure it out, and college football in general will be able to figure it out, and we'll have, you know, a somewhat complete college football season. You alluded to the fact that there were some crazy upsets, some interesting viewing experiences, a couple of close calls. And we're going to talk about all that sort of in the context of how it frames, I guess, what we think of Ohio State. We will talk about Justin Fields and his vegan diet. Ari and I, being the health conscious people that we are, I think we'll explore the finer points of a vegan diet and what it might mean for Justin Fields. And then at the end of the show, we'll do our next position review or position preview for the running backs. Please send in more 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. That helps us out a ton. Shout out to our main man, RJR in the 614, who left us a 5-star review that says Big Fargo, guys, and was pleased that Ari made the suggestion to watch Fargo. Now Ari's on the hook to give every one of our listeners a solid television recommendation every single week. So good luck with that.
Should I do it now?
I mean, yeah.
I'm watching.
That's in the biz, we call that that's called me putting it on a tee for you.
Okay. So I swung and missed the first time then. I don't usually watch network television because I like the adult nature of like a show like Fargo and curse words and selling drugs and all the stuff that comes with it.
You like the adult nature of it.
Yeah, but I'm watching this show called For Life right now, and I think it's on ABC, and it's about a guy who was sent to prison for life for being a drug
kid. You talked about this last week.
We did?
Yeah, you did. I think you need to keep notes. Can you put a post-it on your laptop that says I talked about this week so that I don't describe the same show again next week?
I did that on the last week's podcast.
Yes.
Okay, then just do Fargo Season 2.
I don't think you recommended it, but you described the show last week for sure.
Okay, well, I think that people should know that it's good. I'm almost done, but it's a solid show. And you know what? You said one recommendation a week, guy, so I gave you a recommendation a week. Like, I just did what you asked. You didn't say don't repeat anything you've ever said on this podcast before. You said give me a recommendation. I did that.
Shows of an adult nature. I'll watch For Life. I'll check it out.
Yeah, you should.
You want to talk about college football?
I think you should watch Fargo first, but yeah.
I do want to watch Fargo. I was contemplating, because I know it's like a, what do they call it? Like an anthology series where like not every season is connected to the other. I thought about watching it. I'm going to debut on Sunday, but then I thought, you know what? I'm going to start from the beginning.
There's loose connections in each season, but they're all their individual stories, and I would not suggest starting with season 4. Start with season 1.
Okay, I'll do that. when we're reconvening next week. And
if you start it at any point on Monday or Tuesday, you'll be done by the time we talk next week. I guarantee it.
I know. That's why I'm scared, because I have work to do this week.
Okay. It's the best show ever made. It's the best season of television ever made. The only one that can compete with it is the final season of Breaking Bad.
That's high praise. All right. Let's talk about college football. Ohio State is back in the AP poll, which is not surprising because we knew that the Big Ten teams are going to be put back into the poll this week. Ohio State checks in at number six, and basically what happened is some voters didn't put Ohio State in at all, or didn't put any Big Ten teams in at all, which is strange because they have no problem voting for them in the preseason when no one's played a game, but now they can't do it. The top five is basically everyone we thought was good that hasn't lost yet, and then Ohio State is number six, which I guess makes sense. Beyond that, number three, Oklahoma, gets upset. Loses to Kansas State for the second year in a row. Georgia looks awful, but is still ranked number four. At least their offense looks awful, but is still ranked number four. Number six, LSU, defending national champions, loses Mississippi State. It was a wild weekend. I think maybe not unexpected because of the weird buildup to this season, but when we see these names, I guess these marquee names, kind of going down in the fashion they did already, some other teams not looking so great. I think you throw Texas in that mix too, almost losing to Texas Tech, giving up almost 56 points, I think it was. Does it make you think any differently about Ohio State, how tricky this season might get, its susceptibility to an upset, or maybe on the flip side of that, like the path to the playoff perhaps being easier when you see some of these other teams stumble early?
You made me look at the AP poll for the first time in 3 years, and I hate you for that. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't mean to like not answer your question. We'll get to that, but like Auburn looked awesome. If you're not going to rank teams that haven't played yet, like Ohio State should be behind all of the good ones or in front of all of them. Like, I don't understand.
It's weird. I don't know what I would have done.
Miami has definitely earned the better ranking than Ohio State, if that's how we're doing this. But if it's either one or the other, and right here it's kind of both. It's like, do you, people think that Ohio State's worse than Notre Dame? Who's number five? Okay, we're not doing this. I'm sorry. I just like it just drives me crazy because there's no thought process whatsoever into how people vote in this thing.
Well, the problem is that there's fractured thought processes. Like, the fact that some people can decide to vote for teams that aren't playing and others decided not to vote for teams that aren't playing, like, basically negates the entire thing. But, you know, in, like, 2 months it won't matter.
Yeah. So that's a good question. Like, I was watching all the other games, and, like, I was super excited to watch Georgia because I wanted to see Dwan Mathis play. And, like, I'm obsessed with the idea of how much Justin Fields' transfer could have like changed in terms of the quarterback carousel in the sport. And I was really hoping that Dwan Mathis would be like really good because I thought that that would be like an interesting dynamic of like Georgia gets ridiculed all the time for letting Justin Fields go. Their offense couldn't get a first down on Saturday in their first game against an overmatched Arkansas team, or what people thought was overmatched. And then Justin Fields was on the team, they'd be like the national championship favorite. So I thought, well,
I think Justin Fields was trending for a little bit.
Yeah, I think that was probably like the easiest leap to make. And like I thought, well, if Ohio State gets Justin Fields and goes to the playoff like we expect this year as a result of having him, then at least like the consolation prize, like in one of those like trades that Major League Baseball teams make, like 8 years later, the player to be named later turns out to be like an all-star. I thought maybe Dwan Mathis will be good. And I'm not, like, punting on the idea that he will turn out to be a really good quarterback. That's still a chance. But, like, he got pulled in the first half, and I'm not sure I love the idea of it. And then Georgia got rolling in the second half, so maybe I'm wrong. But count me skeptical that they wouldn't have done it either way. But it made me think, like, did Georgia look bad because they lost their quarterback and their offense is discombobulated and JT wasn't ready to play and of course, Newman opted out. Like, did Texas almost lose because they don't play defense in the Big 12? Did Oklahoma lose because, again, they don't play defense in the Big 12? And, like, some of the teams that, like, ended up losing, like LSU, did they just lose because they lost their entire team? Or, like, is it all a product of the pandemic and, like, everything that happened without spring football and all the things? There's a lot of special teams errors in these games, which Chris Vanini wrote about last week in terms of, like, that would be a major thing to not have without spring football. And I'm trying to like put my thumb on it. Like, do we think that that was the craziest week of college football because people are sloppy, or is it just a reorganizing of the thoughts that we had about these teams coming into the year and it just being wrong either way. And that's the thing that I'm curious about. Because I look at Ohio State's schedule and I see Penn State week two, and I wonder, like, if Ohio State is going to fall victim to the same type of thing that some of these other top five, top ten teams did in losing this weekend, like, should we be thinking about the Penn State game differently right now? And maybe we shouldn't, because that's a week two game instead of their opener like some of the other ones. But, like, Oklahoma was playing in week two. So, like, it kind of, like, made me think, is it too much pressure to put on Ohio State to consider them one of the best teams in program history during a weird year with no spring football, at a time which games are being canceled and things are all over the place?
Ohio State's in an interesting spot because I'm sort of on the same track with you, like with the Penn State game and what that might reveal about Ohio State. But Ohio State gets to open with Nebraska, and I think Nebraska in some ways, and I think I felt this before, might be kind of the perfect opening opponent, because I just don't think Nebraska is good enough to beat Ohio State, but I think they're good enough to show Ohio State's warts before they would go play Penn State the following week. And maybe if you're Ohio State, that's a position you're not all upset about being in. Obviously, you want to come out and play really well in your opener, but if a team is actually willing to push you in the first game, like Oklahoma was playing its second game, but its first game was against Missouri State. Like, they had no idea what they had before Oklahoma stepped on the field against another Power 5 opponent in Kansas State. And Kansas State beat them last year, too, so I don't know. Maybe there's something going on in Manhattan, Kansas, that has the super complicated Alex Grinch defense all figured out.
You couldn't beat Arkansas State in week one.
Yeah, well, that's another thing that's, like, tricky and all this, is that the Big 12 came off this weekend where they had all these upsets and also had those games where they lost to Sun Belt conferences. Like, the Big 12 as a collection of teams is not in a particularly good place right now, I don't think. I don't think it's eliminated from the playoff conversation, because Oklahoma lost Kansas State last year and still went to the playoff. But it's an interesting spot to be in. And, like, it has a million things bouncing around in my head as it pertains to Ohio State. It's like, if you were worried about Ohio State playing fewer games compared to the other Power 5 leagues and what that might do to inhibit its ability to get to the playoff, like, does the idea that the Big 12 looks like a mess right now, or the fact that Georgia, who was thought to be a contender in the East, kind of looks like what it's been, which is a really good defensive team with an offense that maybe not is good, might not be good enough to make any noise and get to the college football playoff. Like, do you feel any better about Ohio State's path to the playoff because of that? Because the contenders that you would stack up against it didn't look like it in the first week of a weird season or second week of a weird season, whatever it was, depending on the team. And I would feel pretty good. Like, I felt good about their ability to make the playoff in the first place. Like, I don't know if I feel any differently, but if I were hesitant on the idea of, like, playing nine games and still getting the playoff, I would feel slightly better about that right now.
Yeah. It just, like, in your head, what is Ohio State? Is Ohio State 90% of what they were last year, or are they kind of a weird team that needs a few weeks to get going? Because, like, if it's 90% or 80% of what they were last year, I think they beat every team that played on Saturday. Clemson didn't play on Saturday. Alabama did. They did not cover the spread. That's not the reason why I think that, but it just, like, nobody looked overly impressive to me in the sense of, like, this is a monster team. The only team that's done that is Clemson, and they didn't play. So, like, if Ohio State is what we think they are, I think the more interesting conversation isn't whether they're going to make the playoff. It's whether they're going to win a national title, because, like, I'm already ready to skip over that spot. And to me, it's just like the conversation that they're going to have in college football this year is, if there's a team from the American that goes undefeated, are they going to not put the Big 12 in because of how terrible it's been for them? So, like, to me, watching the games and trying to frame it from an Ohio State perspective, I think you come away and come out of that weekend feeling even better about Ohio State's walk to the playoff. And I think you feel even better about Ohio State's chance of winning a national championship, because I think Alabama has some things they needed to iron out, and Clemson still looks like Clemson, but, like, that's what you expect in a normal year. And, like, who knows? Maybe Ohio State will get bitten on the way, but it probably won't. But maybe Clemson will, or maybe Alabama will. In such a weird year, like, I think Ohio State's path seems to be the most manageable, because their schedule is, frankly, easier than Alabama's. And Clemson also has a manageable schedule, but, like, what team has an easier path? I bet you if you went and looked at the odds right now, Ohio State would be the favorite to win the national championship, just based on path alone.
I think that's right. And we talked about that, I think, last week when we first saw this new schedule. It's a It's okay. That one's okay. I think people are more okay with you repeating yourself about Ohio State than you are describing a random TV show again. the path is it has to be the easy of all the contenders. It has to be the easy. They're playing fewer games. I don't think, you know, they got lucky with their West draws. I think they don't have to play Wisconsin. They don't have to play Minnesota. So it's certainly there for the taking. I just don't know if like the idea of Georgia with a new offensive coordinator didn't look great on offense, like didn't have stuff figured out in its first game. Texas with a new defensive coordinator, Chris Ash, did not look good defensively. Like, does it give you any pause about what Ohio State's defense might have to work through with Kerry Combs as a new coordinator? Or is the fact that their identity was sort of in place from last year, even though the coordinator's changing, make you feel a little better about
that? I think that the fact that the coordinator used to play at Ohio State or used to coach at Ohio State makes me feel better about the transition. But like the thing that like just kind of keeps getting at me, and I don't know what it is, but Georgia just doesn't make any sense to me, Bill. Because like this is like a pretty good comparison, in my opinion. Like aside from the fact that they don't have a quarterback, which is a pretty big difference, but Georgia is one of the most talented teams in college football. I think the most talented team in college football in the rank, and they still should be able to throw their weight around against teams that they're overmatching. And the fact that they didn't makes me wonder, like, is that going to be enough, or do you have to be sound to win? And win handily over and over again. So the question is, do you think Ohio State is going to be sound? And if they aren't, do you still think that their talent enough is enough to go through the Big Ten without about slipping in this odd year? Because it's like it's been 2 years since Purdue, and it's been three since Iowa. And, like, you know, in my mind, those games are always the exception, not the rule, and I never take into account that they could happen again until they do. But, like, is this a year that something like that could actually happen to Ohio State, or do you think that there's just too much talent? Because that's why I brought up Georgia. Like, you would think there's just too much talent. I would lay the points every week if I were betting on Georgia against Arkansas, and they couldn't even get a first down. They couldn't run it. And it's like, I know their quarterback was new, and there's a freshman, but between all the talented players they have on both sides of the ball and the options they had at quarterback, I cannot explain how that happened in the first half. Now, they ended up covering the initial spread, and they got it going, so that stuff happens. Slow halves happen, but, like, the question is do you think Ohio State is more susceptible to being upset as a result of the weird year?
No, I don't think so. And Georgia is number one in the 247 talent composite, by the way. Bama's two, Ohio State's three. I don't feel that way about Ohio State only because we know what they did last year worked. And I'm not even expecting Kerry Combs to come in and, like, revamp everything. I don't – and especially now with the way the offseason went. So I expect Ohio State to come out defensively and look largely what it looked like last year. And we know that worked. And they have personnel losses for sure that you can't ignore. Chase Young, Okuda, Damon Arnett, those guys. But the system itself is effective. So even if Kerry Combs, like, went nuts and came out against Nebraska and said, like, look at this crazy new defense we're trying, and, like, it didn't work, they can revert back to what they did last year. I think places like Georgia were trying to pretty substantially revamp what they were doing offensively and become more explosive and maybe even, like, modernize a little bit, if that's a fair term to use. And even, like, you look at Texas's defense, like, what they've been doing is not what Chris Ash has done historically. So there's, like, conflicting styles and personnel there that I just don't think exists with Ohio State's defense. So no, I'm not nervous about that. I think it could be a little clunky because of the personnel changes, but if it is, it's like something they can iron out fairly quickly. Because they showed an ability to do that last year. Now, Kerry Combs has never been in a position to call a defense as a coach, at least not since he was at – where was he at? What was the high school he was at?
Coleraine, Cincinnati.
Down at Cincinnati. Coleraine, yeah. He hasn't been a coordinator since then. He hasn't been a guy, like, running a team or a side of the ball since then, and that was, you know, talking about 20 years ago. But he's smart, and he's been around a lot of really good coaches. He knows a lot of football. I have faith in him to figure it out even if it's a new spot for him. So I think they'll be okay. He'll get tested because, like, Scott Frost is a good offensive coach no matter what you think of his personnel, and obviously Penn State has pieces too. But I don't know. I just don't think they're going to be susceptible in the same kind of way we saw some of the other teams be susceptible this week.
At the very least, though, the Penn State game kind of feels like a one-game season almost. I'm not saying that Michigan's not going to give them a tough game, and, you know, some of the hurdles they have on the way maybe might be interesting. But, like, it's like, to me, it feels like find a way to get through Penn State on the road. then you have a month to regroup and get your team ready to go by the time the big games come. It's just like that landmine there, and that's what's coming early. And in this season where you're having a new defensive coordinator, and I agree with everything you said about Kerry Combs, but new defensive coordinator, new personnel in key defensive back roles, playing Nebraska, who supposedly should have a pretty good offense and could expose some warts. You know, you have a few weird turnovers. I still think Ohio State's going to beat them by 50 because they do every year, and we try to hype this game up like it's not. But, like, in this year, I just, like, am really curious to see, like, how sharp they look immediately. But more so than that, just trying to get the 2-0, I think, is a huge hurdle for this team. And once they clear that hurdle, I think they basically walk into the playoff.
Yeah, I think Greg Madison's presence makes me feel a little better about it too, because while Halfley like got all the shine last year, and it was probably deserved because I think Halfley was calling it for the most part, I think Madison's like a crucial piece in game planning to get them to Saturday, and is obviously someone that Jeff Halfley could have leaned on too, given his experience. Like, Kerry Combs was older, he's in a different place in his career than Jeff Halfley was, and it's not like, you know, it's not a 70-year-old coach mentoring a guy who's in his 30s. Kerry and Greg are more contemporaries, even though Kerry is still quite younger. But having that added benefit, and also the fact that Kerry is the only one that's new. Al Washington's back. Matt Barnes is back. Larry Johnson's been here forever. Like, all these guys are pretty well-versed in what they want to do defensively and can help Kerry Combs out. So I don't expect it to be, like, a flawless execution, but I just think there's too many pillars in place for them to completely fall flat on their face when they get out there for the first game.
Yeah, I mean, if the idea is Kerry Combs' arrival at Ohio State going to be the reason why they are susceptible to losing, I don't think either of us would ever think that. So,
right,
like, it's
right.
Like, I think that him coming here is the saving grace that made it so that it's not a weird transition. So, like, I would be very comfortable with where Ohio State is. And, like, I don't know, seeing, like, the LSU game and the Georgia game kind of put in perspective how more talented teams potentially could lose. But, you know, if you break down each individual game, they all have their own reasons, Bill. Like, Georgia, as you mentioned, new offense, new quarterback. LSU was playing without their offensive coordinator and maybe the best quarterback in college football history. And they were playing against a team that has a amazing head coach who has the most talented team he's ever coached, you know, in their first game since winning a national title. And Oklahoma's defense just sucks. I don't know... You know, like, other than that, if it's just, like, analysis by paralysis, is that the right way to say that?
Flip it.
Paralysis by analysis, by overthinking it and just, like, saying Corona is the excuse for everything. To me, I feel like there's a lot of headway in terms of, like, the path being cleared. And I don't know if the committee after, the inherent biases that are on the committee's mind, even though they're not supposed to think about last year after what happened to Oklahoma in the first round of the playoff last year, is going to do this eye test bullshit again, because, like, everybody saw it. And I mean, here's the thing I don't understand, Bill, not to go on an unrelated tangent, but these guys are so open, it's like coverage breakdowns. How does it happen four times a drive? How do these people even physically get that open? It's not even close.
Four verts is hard to cover, man.
What?
I said four verts is hard to cover.
Isn't that, like, the easiest thing to cover?
I don't know what the easiest thing to cover is, but I mean, you know what's coming and you can't stop it. That's a problem.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it's one thing to give up points, but it's another thing where the other team's just playing catch out there. And it's like, I'm watching this. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? I mean, these guys are catching passes with five yards all the way around them.
That's life in the Big 12, baby.
It's not supposed to be that easy. And what, I mean, it was happening in the Texas game too. It's just like, so what team in the Big 12 is going to be in the playoff? And the other thing, too, is that I would much rather see Alabama play UCF or Memphis than Oklahoma again.
Yeah, or, like, I'd rather see another SEC team in there or get Notre Dame in there or something. I don't need to watch. We know what the Big 12 does when it gets to the playoff. I don't need to see it again.
It's not fair to the Big 12 to be like, you guys sucked in the past. You can't go in anymore, because every team is different. And Ohio State had the worst defense in the history of its program the year before last. And, like, if people would have said your defense sucks last year, even though they did show it, it wasn't the same thing. You know, past biases shouldn't prevent you from making the playoff, but what they do is stop you from having the benefit of the doubt. And I don't think Oklahoma has the benefit of the doubt anymore. And if it's a one-on-one conversation between them and an undefeated team that earned it, or them and Notre Dame who has one loss or something, I go with another team that has a chance to potentially do something different, because the annual tradition of top seed in the SEC blowing out Oklahoma in the first round of the playoff is just one that I want to move past. And it's just funny to me because, like, even going back 2 years to when Ohio State was being compared directly to Oklahoma and they didn't get in, Ohio State didn't deserve to get into the playoff that year. But they had very similarly bad defenses, like statistically, if you remember. And like Ohio State didn't pass the eye test for whatever reason that year, and Oklahoma did. It's just like, I think Ohio State might have been a better candidate to go take a month and try to get ready for the playoff than Oklahoma turned out to be. So, yeah, rant over. But like, I think that like watching these upsets, it's very easy to kind of fall into the trap of like, what's going on here? Like, is this weird no spring football situation going to be the reason why really good teams unravel early in the year and then potentially change the paradigm of the national championship? Or is it just like all three of those upsets are very reasonable when you start thinking about it? And I think it's more of the second thing than it is the first thing.
All right, I have one more question for you, and then we'll move on to Justin Fields and his vegan diet. We've seen some upsets in the SEC, some upsets in the Big 12 in like their first weeks of sort of conference competition, or where it really ramped up. So I'm going to give you four games in the Big 10 that are going to happen in the first weekend, and you tell me which one is most likely to end in an upset. Nebraska at Ohio State, Penn State at Indiana, Illinois at Wisconsin, Michigan at Minnesota.
Is Michigan and Minnesota like even a major upset?
Michigan's ranked and Minnesota's not.
I bet you that spread's going to be less than two scores.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. I know which one you think.
I want to pick it so badly, but I just don't know if I can. But I'm very curious to see what the line might be for Penn State, Indiana.
Yeah. It's a shame we're 3 weeks out. I'd go pull it up for you. But I think it's either the Minnesota or Indiana.
Illinois beat Wisconsin last year in a very fluky game, and I think that's much more likely to be like 50-0 Wisconsin because they're pissed off than it is for Illinois to pull off the upset in that game. I think it's probably Michigan and Minnesota too, road game, new quarterback for Michigan. I think Ohio State at Nebraska, or Nebraska at Ohio State, is probably the least likely of those four. But I do kind of want to get spicy and say Indiana beats Penn State in the first week.
How about this? You wager $100 out of your bank account on Indiana money line 4-1 at the beginning of the year and just let it ride. Come out of the gate swinging. This guy's been pumping Indiana dark horse, dark horse to finish third in the Big Ten East.
Third, yeah, behind Ohio State and Penn State.
After beating Penn State.
Well, this was before we got this new schedule.
I know. Do you want to make a new projection?
That Indiana's going to finish second in the Big Ten East? No, yeah. their schedule is kind of brutal. Their prospects changed a bit when this new schedule came out, because I was ready to embrace the idea of like 6-Windiana or maybe even 7-Windiana. But now I think it's going to be more like 4-Windiana based on the schedule they got.
How many times can you say Windiana on this podcast before we move on?
I'll say it as many times as I want because I love it. I'm gonna put Penn State on upset notice. You don't just go into an empty Memorial Stadium in Bloomington, Indiana, and think you're going to come out with a win against Tom Allen and them boys.
Yeah, I mean the good news is that Indiana's used to that, so
right,
they're in their natural environment.
All right, I'm going to say
there's a possibility that there's some fans that might be in the game by then.
First weekend of the season, October 24th.
I would not be shocked if they changed it. We've got a month.
Yeah, the Big Ten could reverse course after seeing like
every other stadium.
The money that could be had when there's 20,000 people in a stadium.
Yeah.
All right, my spicy week one Big Ten take is that Indiana's going to beat Penn State.
Wow. Tweet it. It's not real till you tweet it.
It's on the podcast. We got it down on wax. It's there forever.
Yeah.
All right, tell me everything you know about vegan diets.
My first thought when I saw that Justin Fields was on a vegan diet, and if you haven't seen that yet, go read Bruce Feldman's story in The Athletic about it. I thought Ohio State's going to lose four games this year. He's going to be malnourished. But that's also
yeah,
and that's probably highly offensive to some people. But just so you know, I know nothing about being a vegan, and I think we're going to talk about how it's still possible to get fat on being on a vegan diet.
Well, I think maybe first off, we should talk about like if this matters at all. It is interesting. Bruce Feldman, as you mentioned, did have a really good story. TheAthletic.com/4-6 gets you $1 per month subscription. You can go read that story. And you can also ask us questions for our subscriber mailbag podcast later this week. Bruce talked with Justin about like the impetus of going on this vegan diet. And it was basically his family did like a 28-day cleanse challenge. And then he kind of stuck with it. Now Ohio State's giving its Heisman Trophy hopeful quarterback personal vegan meals to eat. And he said he feels faster. I don't know if he's any smaller. He says he's leaner and faster. And leaner, I think, might make you a little nervous when you think about Justin Fields getting hit, but faster is interesting. I don't know how much faster you get from when you switch to a vegan diet, but the idea that Justin Fields is faster, does that do anything to change how you think the season might go for him?
Is he going to be stronger?
I don't know if he's going to be weaker.
Yeah, I trust that Justin Fields knows how to eat for his body. Whatever he was eating before seemed to be working for him, so I hope that for his sake, that whatever he's doing, it makes sense. And you know, Ohio State's got the nutrition team and all the stuff. They're not going to feed their quarterback stuff that they don't think is going to be good for his ability. So if he's faster, that's good. I hope that he's as strong for his sake and that he feels good. And like being a vegan, I don't really know the first thing about it. So it's kind of hard to like kind of break that down. But there's plenty of protein in vegetables, Bill. I'll tell you that much. And if he's lifting hard and he still feels like fueled through all of his weightlifting regimens and stuff, then like, I mean, who am I to tell him not to do it, you know?
So Pablo Fields, Justin's father, who is, he's a big dude. Like he's a pretty, like, I've seen him a couple times in person. He's a pretty well put together guy. Says he lost 28 pounds doing this diet that Justin's whole family started doing. And they started it right around the time that the quarantine stuff started. So it's been a few months. And 28 pounds in a few months is not crazy, but it's nice weight loss for Pablo. How quickly could you put on 28 pounds on a vegan diet?
So we have to break down exactly what vegan is. So I can't have meat or cheese or anything that was cooked in
As I understand it, it is any animal byproduct you are not allowed to put in your body. So meat and cheese for sure, and then stuff that's like processed with animal products.
Okay, so like I'm typing into my Google right now. Yep, Lay's potato chips are vegan. So like if I'm allowed to have bread, I'm allowed to have corn puffs and potato chips. I'm allowed to have peanut butter, I'm assuming. And like I've been, I don't know how many. Okay, so there's a grocery store on the West Coast called Sprouts. Landis told me that they don't have them in Ohio. But it's just like a Trader Joe's, but it's like a farmer's market, and it's a grocery store. You can get really fat in those places. Because it's like healthy, and it's like hemp seeds and organic juice and, you know, lettuce and kale chips and all the stuff that you would see. But, like, there's also a bunch of snacks. And, like, I feel like with nuts and certain things, if you went the wrong way on it, like, we're replacing meat with carbs. So I think I could put on weight faster than you could lose it. So if it was like a challenge, if me and Pablo Fields started at the same weight, I bet you I could find the 28 pounds that he loses before he gets to his destination. Like that's a challenge.
Yeah. So I've never done vegan. I've done vegetarian, but I still ate cheese and that took the whole thing off the rails because I gained weight.
Yeah, then what's the point? Yeah, like, I mean, what is the point of that? Why did you do that?
I did it for Lent. I gave up meat for Lent one year.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was gonna ridicule you, but we're not. No,
it's okay. I have also done Whole30, which is like no dairy, and it's more sophisticated than that. But there's no dairy in that. It's approaching vegan, I guess, but you can eat meat. And that was hard to do because I like my cheese and I like my ice cream. I'm a large man. But I was looking at these what things you can eat on a vegan diet, and it was like, yeah, you can eat bread and pasta. And I was like, I would gain so much weight because that's all I would eat.
You want to hear some things that you can eat on the vegan diet?
Yeah.
Oreos.
Yep.
Pringles.
Yep.
Pop-Tarts.
Yep.
Doritos.
Yep.
Fritos.
Cool Ranch?
Cool Ranch for Doritos. Fruit by the Foot. Ritz Crackers. Sour Patch Kids. Ruffles. Smarties. Those Nature Valley granola bars that disintegrate in your hands before you take a bite. Lay's. Smucker's Uncrustable Sandwiches. Gummy Bears and Gummy Worms. Those Thomas Bagels. Lint Truffles.
Ooh, Cliff Bars. Truffle.
Triscuits. Nabisco Graham Crackers. Snyder's Peanut Butter Filled Pretzels and all sorts of different types of pretzels. Sun Chips. Swedish Fish. Nutter Butter. And those Bavita Crunchy Breakfast Biscuits that taste like heaven.
Those are really good.
You could go off the rails real fast on this diet. So, I don't know. Like, people who do this are doing it to be healthy, and, like, I love that about them. But, like, if I was only eating vegan stuff, I could make it. You can always make it count. That's the problem with these diets. The whole 30 thing, the vegetarian thing. Like, unless you're in it for the spirit of what it is, then you're off the rails. So yeah. It's like, because, like, if you can have cheese pizza on a vegetarian diet.
You can. Like, yeah. And that's why, like, Justin Fields is plant-based, and we don't know exactly what he's eating, but he's not – I'm going to assume that his mind does not work the same way that your mind and my mind work, where someone suggests to you a diet, and you say, oh, yeah, that sounds great, and then you immediately start Googling all the workarounds so you can eat all
the food. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The first thing that you think about when you are changing your diet in order to be a healthy lifestyle, or what are the things that I'm not that I'm technically allowed to eat but still shouldn't.
Right.
It's like it's the same thing on the keto diet. Like – you lose a bunch of weight if you completely cut out carbs, but it's just like you can go to Wingstop every day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just because there's no – you can have steak every night. And, like, maybe you would still lose weight in the short term. I don't know if that's necessarily healthier. But I know that people, like, make jokes about the vegan diet. And I think that people were, like, a little bit worried. I mean, my first thought was, is he going to maintain his strength? You know? But I think that's probably more of a stereotype for people who are uneducated about the proper way to do it than it is the reality of it. It's like the jokes about veganism are my favorite joke about veganism is show me two people who never shut up, people who do CrossFit and people who are vegan.
Yeah.
And a lot of times if they're both, then you're in trouble. But like I didn't take the star quarterback who can throw the ball 80 yards in the air from his knees as being a vegan guy, but like he's doing it. And feels better.
Yeah. Cam Newton is on the vegan diet, and he's gigantic. So
is he on the vegan diet for like the last 6 months, or is he being a vegan for like 10 years?
I think he's been one for at least a year or two.
Really?
Yeah. And he's playing pretty well right now.
He looks good, yeah.
Somebody said something to him about – I was reading an article about it, and someone mentioned something to him about being a vegan, and he said something. He's like, you can eat good. I'm not going outside and grabbing a handful of grass and putting ranch on it, which is like – I mean, he's not eating ranch because ranch isn't vegan, but I thought it was a funny way. Yeah, there is a misperception, I think, with a lot of the stuff. I do think it's interesting that as we continue to ponder the idea of like Justin Fields gearing himself up for what could be a kind of transcendent season at Ohio State, that he's taking it to this extreme. And I don't mean extreme in a bad way. I just mean like he's not like leaving any stone unturned, I think, to try to be the best possible version of himself and what will be his last year as Ohio State's quarterback.
And you got
to
love the idea that he tried something and it worked for him, and then he thought, this is something that I'm going to keep doing. Because like he did this long before he even knew there was going to be a season and has stuck with it, because that must mean that he's taking to it. And it's like, I always think that like if you're not eating meat, then where do you get your protein from? Great protein sources on the vegan diet. Beans, chickpeas, lentils, peas, soybeans, tofu.
Not fruit by the foot.
Edamame. Tempeh. I don't know what that is. Oreos. No, okay, that last one's a joke. So, funny thing about me, when I was in college, I might have said this on the podcast too. You tell me if I did, because I didn't write it down. But I took a class my sophomore year called Nutrition, Food, and You. And in this class, I was in a fraternity, and the fraternity, I don't know if this is like something that happens at all colleges or just my fraternity, but they had a test room where all the old tests from courses were in this room. And I don't even know if that's cheating or not, but it was used as a study source. Nutrition, Food, and You, after I studied the previous tests, gave the same test. So like nice. I knew the answers. And, like, I got a 98% in that class because the only thing that mattered in the class were their test scores. And, like, I had to miss questions on purpose. So it didn't seem fishy. And let me put it that way. I should have actually – that was the one course in college that I wish I would have paid attention.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one where I could have just breezed through and just, like, read all the test scores and, like, get through it. No problem. But nutrition is a super complex, fascinating discussion. And, like, I love the idea that – you know, the quarterback is doing something new that he, you know, feels good about. And then Ohio State, of course, has the resources to promote that. And I'm assuming he's still getting as much protein as he needs and is eating in a creative way. And if it helps him feel leaner, stronger, faster, everything that this guy can do to make himself even 1% better from the version that we saw last year is an encouraging thing for Ohio State and the reason why I think they're going to win the national title this year.
That'd be a hell of an endorsement for a vegan diet of Justin Fields to stand on that podium holding that gold trophy at the end of the year.
Yeah, most people do vegan because it's more – is it, it – do most people become vegan because they are trying to make a stand against animal cruelty, or is it a health thing? Maybe both.
Probably a mix of both, and I think sometimes people find that they're allergic to things or their bodies react poorly to – like a traditional diet and go plant-based to, you know, make their life more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Not as miserable.
It would be nice to be able to, like, probably eat, like, everything that Justin Fields eats. It'd be a really good story idea if you did a weigh-in of what your current weight is right now, and then you had Ohio State give you every meal that he eats, and then you paid for it, of course, because they can't give you anything. That would be unethical. But then you wrote a story about how your body changed eating the way Justin Fields eats.
I want to do that. I need to drop some LBs.
Can you, like, send them out to my way, too?
Sure, we'll do it together.
Me, you, that'll Justin be, Fields on the vegan diet. I want to feel faster, I'll tell you that much.
That'll be an ongoing feature on 4 to 6 with A&B. Bill and Ari go vegan for the football season.
You got to get the Mickey Marotti shirt off, legs, pants all the way wrapped around
your... I won't be doing that. Because you know, because even, like, Zeke Elliott put his up. I was like, your before picture looks great. What are we doing here? I wish I was the before picture.
No, but the before picture... from somebody who drops a ton from being vegan would make the second one even more powerful than even Zeke's.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I hate you if you're the before picture guy that looks good.
Yeah, don't post a before picture unless you're looking like a slob, unless your stomach's hanging over your belt line.
If your before picture is my end goal, then I hate you.
Kevin Wilson, who sort of let the cat out of the bag with Justin Fields' vegan diet, last week said there are other guys on the team who are doing similar things. He didn't say who, but I find it interesting. And like you said, Ohio State can do whatever these guys need them to do from a nutritional standpoint. So it's not like I didn't hear that and go like, oh man, that's gonna be bad for Justin Fields. But I did think it was interesting. And I'm curious to see, like, if the idea of faster, stronger, leaner Justin Fields, like, is perceptible as we're watching a game.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it.
All right, speaking of Justin Fields, last week we did our first position preview for the 2020 season. We talked about the quarterbacks. This week we're going to move to the other spot in the backfield, running backs. Another interesting nugget from Kevin Wilson last week was the idea that they're going into the contact part of camp, which, by the way, starts this week. We're recording this on Monday, September 28th. Wednesday the 30th is the first day that Ohio State anticipates being in pads, which is, like, kind of a milestone as we get closer to the season. For the moment, the plan seems to be 50-50 split first-team running back reps between Trey Sermon and Master Teague, which is revealing, I think, of Master Teague's physical condition. If Kevin Wilson's saying that, then I think that means, like, the Master Teague, if he's not all the way back, he's pretty much there. And by the time the season comes around, he should be all the way back. The other thing that was revealed was that Marcus Crowley is not quite back from his ACL. And whether that means he's not going to be available for the opener, I'm not sure. We're still a few weeks away from that. But at the moment, the starting tandem at running back is Trey Sermon and Master Teague, with Steel Chambers backing them up as, like, the second team guy. Mayan Williams, a true freshman, speaking of guys who changed their body, is also there in the mix too. And he looked really good when he came in to the program back in June. 50-50 split at the start of practice when they get in now. Do you think they'll come out the other end with the same kind of idea?
Yeah. 60-40, 50-50, 70-30. I don't know. It's all the same to me.
Pizza is pizza.
No, it's not. Unless, did you just compare Master Teague to Little Caesars?
Unless it's Little Caesars. No, I would never do that.
I know.
Can't be doing that.
Yeah, that would be an insult.
They've been in this position before. 2018, it was like a 60-40 split with J.K. Dobbins and Mike Weber. or yeah, that was the year where Weber was healthy for the majority of the year, and Dobbins was coming off his awesome freshman season. That did not go particularly well. They ranked number 76 in the country in yards per carry. The year before that was a similar split, a little more in Dobbins' favor. They were number 8 in the country in yards per carry. They also had JT Barrett in the backfield, which I think is a important piece of the equation when you think about what that rushing attack looked like in 2017. But I do think when people think about the idea of like running back tandem, running back by committee, however you want to couch this, I think Ohio State fans get a little nervous about what happened in 2018 when they were not a very effective running team, and it showed up in games like when they lost to Purdue and couldn't score in the red zone. I think 5 trips with no touchdowns in that game. Does tandem make you nervous, or does this feel different to you than Dobbins and Weber?
It feels different to me, but it doesn't make me nervous. Can they be both?
Sure.
I think that Dobbins and Weber was a necessity because they were both really good. And I think they could have gotten away with going with either of them, and it would have been fine. But it was kind of a way to get both those guys on the field, because you wanted both those guys on the field. This year, it kind of seems like they're using two to find their answer. Does that make sense to you? And if they're using two to find their answer, then I guess maybe that is kind of closer to the concerning area than you want to be. But having multiple options to kind of work through that, I think, is a good thing. And I think they're more than talented enough to like get to the playoff. It's just a matter of, will they have the right guy in place who can fight and get extra yards or break away and take it to the house the way J.K. Dobbins did last year in the playoff? Record it, frame it, put it on your wall. I said it. But seriously, it really matters. And, you know, I think that, like, every team has susceptibilities and some places where they're not quite sure of themselves, especially in the beginning of the year. But in order to win it all, which is how we're constantly framing this football team, everything has to be good. Because as you found out last year, J.K. Dobbins is one of the best running backs in college football. And if he would have had a 5% better game against Clemson, maybe they would have won a national championship. Maybe they would have been playing LSU. You know, and that's not putting it on his shoulders, but that's the reality of it. I mean, you need every ounce of production that you can get from these guys at every turn. And, you know, it's, am I talking myself into being concerned here? Like, I don't know.
Like, sounds like a little bit.
I'm not concerned about anything on Ohio State's roster as it pertains to the regular season and winning the Big Ten. I am concerned, however, if their running back tandem is what I think they are now. In January, when they're playing Clemson, then I'm concerned.
I think that makes sense.
But they,
and I think that's,
but they also could grow, way. Bill. I mean, like, they could be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For sure. For sure. My level of concern is fairly low, as I don't think 2018 was a byproduct of a few things. One, the offensive line, I don't think, was particularly good that year. Two, they didn't have a quarterback run threat. And three, J.K. Dobbins and Mike Weber had by that point sort of taken turns being the man. And I think once you're the man, it's hard to find yourself or accept a position where you're no longer the man, which is why part of the reason why I think J.K. was so good last year, because there was no doubt that he was number one tailback. I think he struggled with that, and he admitted that in 2018. And I think Mike Weber probably did the same after he was a 1,000-yard rusher in 2016 and then was kind of forced into a tandem, or even, you could argue, a backup role in the 2 years after that. That's not really a play here, because Master Teague saw his first action last year and he was a backup. And like Trey Sermon, for as good as he is and as productive as he was at Oklahoma, was never like the man there. They always sort of had a balanced rushing attack with multiple players. They had some really high volume rushing quarterbacks, particularly the year Kyler Murray was there. So like neither one of these, I'm sure these guys would love to be a bell cow kind of back, but they've never been one. So I think maybe it's easier to wrap your mind around the idea of accepting a dual role, and maybe that puts them in position to flourish, and one of them sort of rises to the top and becomes more of a lead back. But I think there's a mentality thing here at play, or that was at play in 2018, that won't be at play with Trey Sermon and Master Teague going into this year. I'm a little worried about the depth at the position, because all these guys have had significant injuries. Trey Sermon and Marcus Crowley have had knee injuries. Master Teague had an Achilles injury. And beyond that, you have like Steel Chambers, who they're talking pretty fondly about, we just haven't seen much of. And then like a freshman in Mayan Williams. And then if you're forced to, you got to get like creative with DeMario McCall. And that's a little precarious given the injury history, but it doesn't do so much to like lower my confidence level in the position. So let's do this. We didn't do this last week, and I meant to. So let's knock out quarterback real quick. Rate your comfort level with the quarterback position group on a scale of 1 to 10.
10.
I'm at a 10 for quarterback. More interesting, rate your comfort level of the running back group on a scale of 1 to 10.
7.
Yeah, I'm like a 6.5. Which I think is okay. 6.5, 7, I think is fair.
Where would you put in the what rating, numeric rating would you make nervous or worried about?
Anything lower than 6. Anything lower than 5 is like red alert worry. 5 is whatever, and I think, but anything lower than 6 is like, oh,
I don't know. It'd be fun to go around the Big Ten and rank everybody else's position groups.
I don't know enough about them. You know who's a 10, though, is Indiana.
Yeah. I mean, book it.
I would feel, I think I'd feel a little, I'd be a little lower on this. I might be like in the 5s on this if I thought that the offense was going to be a vehicle for the tailback in the same way it was last year. I think this year, tailback becomes complementary to the Justin Fields show. Last year wasn't the Justin Fields show. Even though he was a Heisman Trophy finalist and put up crazy numbers, it was, let's put Justin Fields in comfortable positions and really rely on the running game. I think this is the opposite this year. Run the ball well enough to have people, to have teams respect that you don't lose that part of your game because the physicality matters. But this is, like, let Justin Fields cook time, in my mind.
That's what we wanted. I mean, that was the whole crux of the entire discussion about Justin Fields last week, so you should have written that down. And, you know, that's what I'm hoping. If it's a Justin Fields show, I feel like Ohio State is in position to win the national championship. I want the Justin Fields show. Everybody who watches Ohio State wants the Justin Fields show. Trey Sermon should be a compliment. He shouldn't be the offense. They've got the best player in college football on their team, maybe. That's the way it should be. That's the way it's – even if – can I say this? If J.K. Dobbins was back on the team, it should still be the Justin Fields show.
Yeah, it would flip. I think it would flip. It'd be more of a balance. I do
think it would be a balance. J.K. was really good.
It'd be more of a balance, yeah. But I still agree with you. It would flip. It would flip.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting position. I don't think the I'm going to dig into this some later on, before the season, but later on, sort of in the preseason, like how the running game might change, if at all, with like the new personnel. I don't think it'll be a ton, but I think there's some interesting things there. I asked Kevin Wilson last week. I said, so like, Kevin, when you bring a guy like Trey into the program, do you look at some of the things he did well at his previous school and maybe try to incorporate some of those things, or you sort of just fold him into what you guys have done well historically? And he started answering your question, and he just stopped, and he goes, wait, are you just asking me if we're going to run Oklahoma's counterplay? And I was like, yes.
God, you're such an X's and O's genius, Bill.
I'm not. I feel like you're belittling me when you say that.
No, I'm not.
I don't claim to be an X's and O's genius, but I do like the intricacies of the game, and I love that play. Speaking of Bruce Feldman, he wrote a really good story about that play last year that I'll be linking in the story that I read about Ohio State's run game in a few weeks.
Yeah, you got to know that Kevin Wilson's going to be all up to speed on Oklahoma's stuff. I think he pays attention to them still.
He said that. He said, we watch Oklahoma all the time, which I also thought was interesting and probably worth digging into a little bit kind of separately from that.
That's what I'm working on this week, John, if you're wondering.
Yeah, Ari's writing about Lincoln-Riley spread and the marriage of the air raid and the Kevin Wilson run game and how Ryan Dakin, and the GT counter.
And Bill's writing a story about why Oklahoma can't get defensive commits in the recruiting class.
I'm writing about how Penn State can't recruit Philadelphia. we're flipping the script this week.
Well, you want to tease what you're actually writing?
Yes, I will. Every Wednesday moving forward, and I hesitate to promise these things, but we're getting close to the season, so I will fall into a bit of a rhythm. I'm going to have like a film room kind of piece, film study slash feature kind of deal. And after talking with Kevin Wilson and the tight ends on Friday, I'm going to write a little bit about Ohio State's use of 12 personnel, 2 tight ends last year, and how it increased last year, the frequency with which they did it, how they used it, and how it might grow coming into this year, sort of balancing with the idea that they have these really dynamic young receivers coming up and trying to dig in a little bit on how Kevin Wilson and Ryan Day will manage all of that while taking the offense forward in a positive direction. So I don't know if that sounds interesting to anybody listening, but I'm very excited to do it.
You'll have to let everybody know next week what the numbers were like.
40,000 people read the story.
How many signed up?
0.
Yeah, that's about right.
All right, we'll wrap up there. Thank you guys so much again for listening to 4-6 with A&B. We'll ask you one more time, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. That helps us out greatly. TheAthletic.com/4-6 still gets you $1 per month, and you can sign up there and ask us questions for the subscriber mailbag episode that we record later in the week. We were inside of a month until Ohio State plays its first football game of the 2020 season. I think I speak for Ari when I say we are very excited to start watching some Ohio State football.
Super excited. Can't wait.
Super excited. We'll talk to you guys later in a week.